Marlboro. To recover, step by step, day by day, I'm on the run. To recover, trust in God along the way. Trust in God all the way.
Come on, Michael.
There are tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my ears, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
We're going to get the meeting started with a joke from our joke teller, Greg. Let's welcome up Greg.
Greg.
Hello, everyone. I'm Greg. I'm your recovered alcoholic joke teller.
Hey, Greg.
A sober father was raising his young son with the help of AA slogans and sayings. If the boy was angry or agitated, his dad would say, "Easy does it." If the boy was sad or unhappy, his father would counsel, "Let go and let God." This plan backfired one day when the boy asked to go to the toy store. "Absolutely not," said the father. "Ah, come on, Dad," said the boy. "Bring the body and the mind will follow."
Okay.
Tim's were better. All right, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group. To prepare for our Big Book Study, let's get focused by having a 3-minute meditation followed by the fog light prayer.
Good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jay.
Hey, Jay. And I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We're going to start the meditation in a minute, so please take a moment to get situated.
Please turn off all devices that make noise that will distract others for the duration of the meeting.
The coffee area will be open for this portion of the meeting. Just try to minimize distractions.
Also, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down.
For the meditation, some suggestions are focus on your breath and posture, breathe in God, and breathe out self.
Take this time to get reconnected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the study. So we're going to turn down the lights, we're going to turn on the monks, and we'll see you all in 3 minutes.
Accendere
going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there's cards on the table. You can just follow along. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. Now we're going to have Donald come up and do our secretary's report. Let's welcome up Donald.
Keeping with his heaven tradition that states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining those outside contributions, the baskets are going around now. Don't be cheap. Now, as the basket's going around, I've asked Danny to come up here and read a recovery statement. Now, we read this notice to explain why many people in AA identified as recovered rather than recovering, what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Let's welcome Captain Dan.
All right.
Hi, family. My name is Danny, and I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Danny.
We're not cured of alcoholism, recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem, the main problem of alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Boom. That's it, man.
That's it.
Thank you, Danny. ...1940-style Big Book sponsorship and forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if alcoholics came today and really tried, 50% got sobered up and stayed that way. Now, 25% sobered up after some relapses. Among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Now, what we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time. Neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. Now, the statistics above suggests a 75% success rate. I don't even need these scripts anymore, Mike Chase. After 6 months, it's all in the brain. That's that's what a clear mind from sobriety gets you. Memorizing scripts now. In the back, we have CDs. We have those mugs. We have those large print big books and them little red books and those big book dictionaries for sale. Now, we meet here every Monday, promptly at 7:15. And we ask you to be ready to begin at the Road to Recovery tune.
Thanks, Don. From the foreword of the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of this group.
From there is a solution. Also from the big book, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism.
This is an open meeting, and as such, all who have an interest in alcoholism and our program of recovery are welcome. Because this is an open meeting, you need not identify yourself nor your reason for being here. Your anonymity will be protected. We ask you to protect ours. On the subject of that anonymity, this meeting is podcast. If you don't want your voice out on the interwebs, feel free to not talk into the microphone, or you can disguise your voice.
Can we have a show of hands of people joining us for the first time? We'll start over here.
Jeremy, I'm
going. Hey, Jeremy, welcome.
I saw more hands. Hey.
Hey, I'm Harold. I'm Addie.
Hey, Harold. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Jill. I'm an
alcoholic. Hey, Jill. Welcome.
All right, all welcome. And a show of hands of the recovered alcoholics. And if your hand's not up, we suggest you hang out with those hands, people with the hands who Talk to the one.
If your hand wasn't up, talk to someone whose hand was. All right. While this is an open meeting, membership in this group is... You sure you're recovered? While this is an open meeting, membership in this group is limited to those who wish to recover from alcoholism and have a desire to stop drinking for good and all. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a potential sponsor of a new member and should clearly recognize the obligations and duties of such a responsibility.
All right. And if you need a big book for our big book study, we have loaners at the end of each table. You feel free to borrow those.
Before we begin our study of the big book, last week we reviewed Tradition 7. So tonight, right? All right, so tonight we're going to take a quick review of Tradition 8. Please refer in the unabridged big book page 564-ish and in the abridged big book page 178, 179-ish. Ish.
Spencer.
Hey, Spencer.
Hey, Spencer.
So how this has taken place in my recovery is, you know, every once in a while, I'll run across a newcomer, and I'll give them a couple of suggestions, and they'll come and ask me, "Wow, that really helped me. Can I give you some money to compensate you?" No, it's happened. It's happened. Due to this tradition, I always turn it down. Thank you.
Man. That was better than the joke. All right. In order to help us stay focused as we study the big book, we use the big book study guide prepared by Joe and Charlie and Krusty Cliff, the Dallas Primary Purpose Group.
Tonight we're going to begin reading on page 84, which will be read from the front by tonight's reader, Matt.
Yeah, Matt. 84. After the page is read, we're going to ask questions from the podium starting back on page 84. The answers will be one sentence unless otherwise specified. A multi-part questions are simply a one-sentence answer split up by commas, semicolons, hyphens, and other fun bits of punctuation.
Basically, in English, what Ryan is saying is we're going to read the material once through and then redissect the information a second time through the question and answer format. Notice how the language in the questions gives us a new light in which to consider the study material.
This is important because hearing the question and rereading the content offers a definite way of comprehending the material covered. After we've completed the page, we open up for comments, questions, and observations based on what was just read. If you have spiritual experiences with this information, you're free to share.
However, a big book study is not therapy. Should you begin sharing about topics which are more appropriately discussed in a different, i.e. sponsorship setting, please do not be offended when we cut that conversation short. For that purpose, we have fellowship meetings before and after our study time.
You can never go wrong by commenting on the page, which brings us to the words of one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of any Alcoholics Anonymous group. So we didn't just decide that we were going to start on page 84. We've been reading for about 49 weeks now. We started way back in the beginning of the book in the preface and the forewords. It gives us a little history of what Alcoholics Anonymous is and how it became what it is today. It's kind of important if you're about to join an organization for the rest of your life that you should learn a little bit about that organization. After that, we jump into the doctor's opinion where we learn that this is a threefold illness. It's a physical allergy, it's a mental obsession, and it's a spiritual malady. Dr. Silkworth goes into a lot of detail talking about the physical aspect of the disease, that feeling that we get once we take that first drink of gotta drink, gotta drink, gotta drink, gotta drink. After that, we jump into Bill's story. Now that we know what alcoholism is, we get to see what it looks like in Bill's story. We might not relate to everything in Bill's story. You know, a lot of us haven't gone to war. A lot of us haven't worked on Wall Street. But when it comes to what word am I looking for?
Hopelessness.
Hopelessness, thank you. That hopelessness of his disease and that progression of his disease, that way we can get on board with and we can start to relate to his story a little bit. It's not until his friend Ebby comes along with a spiritual solution to his problem that he's able to do anything about it. After we read Bill's story, we jump into there as a solution. Spoiler alert, the solution is God. We start reading in there as a solution about the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and how important it is, but how that in itself won't help us. We need to have a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening or a complete psychic change, whatever you want to call it, you need to have one. After that, we jump into more about alcoholism, otherwise known as the chapter on relapse. More about alcoholism, we see a couple different stories where they talk about that weird mental twist that happens before a person goes back out. After that, we come in here and learn that we need to have a spiritual solution to our problems. Well, what if we have issues with spirituality? Well, we have a chapter called We Agnostics to help us out with that. After that, we go into how it works, which is where we get into the meat and potatoes of the program. We hit our knees and we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And then we get started immediately on a four-step. We start looking at the different ways that self shows up and what we can do about that. Now we're in the chapter that we're in tonight, which is into action. And what we've done so far is we've learned what we do with that four-step. We take it to our sponsor and read it with them. And then they get to point out some of those character defects that they see as a pattern in our story. And then we turn those over to God. And then what about all the people that we've harmed while we were out there in our addiction? What do we do about that? Well, we have 8 and 9 to teach us how to make amends for those situations. And that's going to bring us to where we are tonight, which is going to be step 10. So do you want to start reading, actually, on the bottom of page 83? We'll just start with the promises.
Matt Alcoholic.
Hey, Matt.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
So this is where our study is going to start tonight. You can keep going.
This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit, and our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anyone, anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldomly be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed his directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God-conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning routine, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select to memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. As we go through the day, we pause, when agitated or doubtful, and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
All right. So the questions are going to start in the middle of page 84. How this will work is Jay will read a question, and Matt will answer the question with something that he just read. Once we do a paragraph, we'll open up for any comments.
With this thought, where are we, and which says we continue to do what?
This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along.
Is this something we do in a lackadaisical manner?
We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past.
What new world have we now become a part of?
We've entered the world of the spirit.
This is our destination, to have the spiritual part of our being brought to life and begin to be aware of his presence in our daily activities. He is our father, we are his children. What is the next thing we do?
Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness.
On page 45, we are promised that this book will show us how to find a power greater than ourselves, which will solve all our problems. We are now to grow spiritually by recognizing that we can truly rely on that promise. We will grow in understanding that our 12 steps really can be a solution to all our problems. We will grow in effectiveness in applying the 12 steps to every area of our lives. Will this suddenly happen?
That's crazy. This is not an overnight matter.
How long must we continue to apply these steps to our lives?
It should continue for our lifetime.
What do we watch for?
Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Isn't this what we did in step 4?
When these crop up.
When these are detected, what do we do and when?
You're really throwing me off tonight.
I have comments.
I know.
Hey, comments. Okay.
That doesn't make sense.
When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them.
What is the next thing we do and when?
Is that a comment?
No.
We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone.
Isn't that what we did in step five, Matt? And then we do what and when do we do it?
Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help.
Then we resolutely do what?
Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help.
Isn't this why we learn to take these steps? To fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us? As we learn to apply step 10, what is the first promise?
No, wait.
Yeah,
no,
you skipped a question.
All right, so we'll open up that paragraph for any comments. I like the part in this paragraph where when it says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. I like that it doesn't say if these pop up. It says when these pop up. That means it's going to happen.
I'm mad. I'm an alcoholic. Oh.
Darren, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Darren.
I like this passage because it says continue so many times, and which kind of presents like an endurance component, whereas I feel like my disease would love it to be like a sprint with a finish line and not have to do these things every day and every night, but the endurance component is giving me a lasting recovery, I guess. That's all I got.
Thanks, Darren.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Shelby.
Hey, Shelby.
And continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along is very hard for me. I'll be honest. I know I'm grateful to have my sponsor to remind me of the big book and certain passages because I don't remember them on my own. And I think that when I first read this, I know it says that I need to continue this for my lifetime, but I'm pretty sure I forgot it. Like, right after I read it, and I thought it was like a one and done. Not the inventory, but that it takes work. It takes like intentional practice and intentional thinking of God and God's children, and it's not just something I can really hope for. I have to like really write about it, work about it, do it, be about it. And I like that you said the when, because that's my sponsor always does say that too. She's like, it's not if and it's not how. It's going to be there. It's going to happen. You're not cured. You're not fixed. You're going to be resentful. You're going to be fearful. You're going to be dishonest. You're going to have resentments. And I love when she reminds me of that. And I love to read it here because I also don't ask God to remove them right away. I kind of sit in them. You know, they're comfortable even though they're uncomfortable. And you know, I think that's part of that lifetime practice, is like, I think one day they'll eventually become less and less uncomfortable, or less and less comfortable. Thank you.
Thanks, Shelby.
Alcoholic Mike Chase.
Hi, Mike Chase.
Hey, Mike Chase.
First thing I notice about this part of the book is I've had a spiritual experience. I'm no longer that person I was on page zero. And at this point in time, I can actually take specific directions without pushing back. That's how much I've changed. Steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 have caused me to be a better person. Steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 has cleared the board with me and God. I am copacetic with God. I have no issues with him. He's never had issues with me, so I can get along with my life a lot better. 8 and 9 has cleared me up with people at large. I can deal with the people in society. And for the first time, I think since I was like 3 or 4 years old, I don't have to look over my shoulder for people I've lied to, cheated, or manipulated, or I got people out to get me. So I'm pure, and I can start to relive my life again. And step 10 is the specific step to keep me in that place. Because I'm human. The human nature is, you know, you look at a baby and they're just so cute and sweet and without any character defects, BS. They know how to lie, cheat, manipulate to get what they want. When we're little kids, and the whole thing about parental and nursery school and Bible study is to like, hey, help me to be a better person. So I'm at that place right now, hopefully, if I've done the steps correctly as they are, or I'm on my way. I do want to point out that there's no asterisk here that says, please disregard the next 5 paragraphs. We've rewritten step 10 in the 12 and 12. Because You're not supposed to. This is the specific directions how to do steps 10 and 11. And I like that because it's really clear cut. I like the fact that when Bill wrote this step 10 and 11, it was in conjunction with 67 other spiritually minded people. So this is directly a God direction. So I follow, when I do steps 10 and 11, I do it out of the big book. I don't go to the 12 and 12 to be distracted. I love the four horsemen. Selfish, dishonest, resentment, and fear. You know, that's always ready to jump out and get me. And I have people in my life that can call me out on it. I get a little bitchy when they do, but I deal with it. This is also one of those steps that I definitely need to be working with newcomers over and over again, because if I'm not working with a newcomer, it's so easy to get slacky on 10 and 11. Because, you know, I'm not holding them accountable, so I might get a little slacky. So when I got some new guys running through the book, and I got them doing their inventories, and they're doing their 10 steps, I got to do the exact same thing. So this is like, for me, it's a great opportunity for that. I just like looking through here because step 10 has prepared me to continue on checking myself on a daily basis so I don't become that person who I was before I did the steps 7, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike Chase.
Good evening, John Alcoholic.
Hi, John.
And step 10 for me is, you know, I can usually feel it in my gut when I say something I should have, especially to one of my partners or somebody at work or my wife at home. Usually I put my foot in my mouth and, you know, when I'm wrong, I can feel it in my gut and I need to do something about it. And I do something about it. My program kicks in and I try to amend, you know, even though I don't like to do it, you know, but I do it because I can't live with the ugly feeling in my gut. That ugly feeling in my gut, if I continually build these ugly feelings in my gut, and then I'm just going to start hating myself like I did at one point. And that'll lead me to a relapse eventually if I don't do something about it. But I can usually know when I put my foot in my mouth or when I do something I shouldn't have or when I say something I shouldn't have. And step 10 is a spot check inventory for me. It's I don't do a written inventory at night, but if I say something wrong or do something wrong, I feel it in my gut. I used to do that written inventory every night, and it's probably good practice to get back into it, you know, and just continue doing what I did when I first got sober to ensure me a better sobriety, a better emotional sobriety, a better feeling inside. So step 10 is definitely part of my life, and I can be doing better at it. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Hugh, alcoholic addict. A step 10 for myself and my experience. In the beginning, you know, personal inventory. Well, wait, I don't do anything wrong. You know, so I had to, the first several times I did this, I had, because it speaks of it, but I had to find out what it was. And so for myself, I had to find a barometer, which I found out where they started this program, where it was initially based upon, was the book of James. And when we were talking about endurance, it speaks of it there. Without endurance, because endurance builds character and character builds faith. So if I don't have that found, and you know, then trials and tribulation, life on life's terms, I see where they were pulling it from. If I'm not going through something, I won't get stronger. And I won't be able to recognize it. It's like if I go to the gym, if I only lift a 5-pound weight, my faith won't get any stronger. If I only run 100 yards, I won't be able to run any farther than 100 yards at full bore. I swam, and to the beginning of the season, we started out with like 1,000 yards a day. By the end of it, we're doing 15,000 yards a day. Then when it gets into personal inventory, as I said, what am I doing wrong? It's the things I was doing wrong that I didn't realize that was impeding me. I was like the glass ceiling. You know, I used to work with a mason. Well, he was a mason contractor. He built these, but they were just beautiful stone, fieldstone fireplaces and hearths. So what he would do, he would put a piece of glass in the chimney, if he felt suspect on the customer, and if they didn't pay him, you know, they're looking up, they light a fire, and smoke's rolling back into the house. But they didn't, you know, looking up, don't know why. I was the same way in my sobriety. This is not my first time in the program. And the acceptance, so in other words, when I made my commitment to God and that broke that glass, then I received the full benefits of the program. But I didn't realize, by not knowing what my inventory was and thinking, well, that's all right, I could see through it, but I couldn't understand why I wasn't going any higher. And my personal inventory, I found, too, for myself, if I waited till nighttime, I'd forget half the stuff. So it says promptly admitted it. So if I find something coming out of my mouth or about to do an action, I have the time to correct it. And if it does come out or I do it, I immediately correct it and take that off my list. Hence the term I didn't understand, starting my day over. I'm like, how can I start my day over? I'm already up. That's what it meant or it was alluding to. I have a fresh start, just like when I ask God to forgive me in the beginning here when I make my list in the fourth step. I'm cleaning my slate and going from there. Thank you.
I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic named Chris.
Hey, Chris.
And sometimes I'm not so, I mean, sometimes there's obvious things that I screwed up with during the day, and it's very obvious that I was only thinking of myself or shouldn't have done this. But sometimes it's not always so clear, like, because I'm not going to, like, just be a pushover for everybody. Sometimes I have to assert myself. But sometimes that can lead to an argument, and then it's like, I don't want to be going around apologizing all day for things that, you know, that for just, like, standing up for myself. So I suppose talking it over with somebody would probably be a good thing, because, like, I'm not just going to walk around like, oh, I'm, like, I can't stand up for myself, or I can't, 'cause sometimes when you do stand up for yourself, it ends up with a, there is conflict in life. But, and you know, where it says be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or more than reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. That's 11. That's not 10?
No, that's on the first paragraph.
Oh, all right. Well, I said what I said.
Anybody else? All right, you want to jump into the next one?
What is the second promise? And we have ceased doing what?
And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol.
What is the third promise?
For by this time, sanity will have returned.
This is a comment, not a question.
Thank you.
What was the hope of step two? By taking the actions the first 100 did through the first 10 steps, we are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Have we now become recovered alcoholics? What is the fourth promise? What will we no longer care about?
We will seldom be interested in liquor.
What is the fifth promise? If tempted, how do we react?
If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame.
What is the sixth promise? How do we react around alcohol?
We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically.
What is the seventh promise? How did we get such freedom?
We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part.
What is the eighth promise? Do we send off for it? Two sentences.
It just comes. That is the miracle of it.
The ninth promise. Are we either fighting temptation or hiding from where alcohol is served?
We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation.
The tenth promise. How do we feel?
We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected.
The 11th promise. Have we taken the pledge?
We have not even sworn off.
The 12th promise, instead, what has happened?
Instead, the problem has been removed.
I have a comment that says, what was the promise on page 45? And the promise on page 45 was that we were going to get connected to a higher power or something. The 13th promise, what happened to it?
It does not exist for us.
The 14th promise,
We are neither cocky nor are we afraid.
Are these promises based on someone's ideas or opinions?
That is our experience.
The 15th promise, what is required to keep these promises alive and well?
That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Awesome. We'll open that up for any comments.
Thanks. Spencer Alcoholics.
Hi, Spencer.
Yeah, this is what the program's all about, right here. It's so inconceivable when you first walk in those doors that you can get to this point. For me, when I'm talking to people that are struggling to get to this point, I talk about things that happened in my life, and they go, and you didn't drink because this happened, this happened, this happened. And it's like the furthest thing from my mind, you know. And then they ask you, well, how did you do it? And I said, the steps. And they said, what specifically? And the sentence here, it just comes. You know, it just comes. There's so many examples in my life where I could have picked up a drink, or I could have been thinking about like how I used to react to these situations. But because I work this program to the best of my ability, and I continue to work with people on a daily basis, it's the furthest thing from my mind. You know, it reminds me, I went to a wedding last year. I handled alcohol. I served alcohol to other people. But was I tempted? No. Because I was prepared for that situation through the work that I had done up until that point, that my sobriety was never in jeopardy. And that's not the person that walked into this room. It's just a full testimony to the program that is laid out in this book, and I'm forever grateful. Thank you.
Thanks, Spencer.
Tim.
Tim.
I can relate a lot to what Spencer just said. This paragraph is the best, and it's so true. And I'm trying, you know, I get questions as well. It's like, you know, how was there, like, you know, and I used to say, oh, well, step five is when I started to feel it, and step nine is, you know, and it's true. Those were, like, you know, very effective steps. And but when I look back at it, it was, I just was focused on going to meetings and doing the steps, and slowly, without even trying, like, it just kind of became the furthest thing from my mind. Like, I had other things to do, like, in a previous paragraph that says understanding and effectiveness. And that's what my life became filled with, was, you know, I had other things to think about. Like, I was doing other things. And now when I, you know, if I come across alcohol, it doesn't, it used to be like, I would be like, no, I'm good. And then there would be that knee-jerk reaction. But, you know what I mean? But now it really does not tempt me at all. And it just was because I was focused on something else. Like, I stopped thinking about the problem so much. I started to think about the solution. And I know that's just a thing. But it's true. It really is. Like, you just stop worrying about it, and then it stops becoming a thing.
Thanks, Tim. I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Matt.
You know, what I really appreciate about the language of step 10 in the big book, not in the 12 and 12, is that it really expands on this idea of perfecting and enlarging our spiritual condition, right? Like way back in the book, at the bottom of page, I looked it up, I'm not that smart, but at the bottom of page 14, it talks about how, like, the alcoholic who fails to perfect in a larger spiritual condition, like, drinks, right? And if we look back at the previous chapter, paragraph, it says right here, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Something about step 10, you know, for me, like, when I first got sober, I could very clearly see how steps 4 through 9 were very much about, like, the past, right? I think until I have, like, a pretty clear, I don't want to say barometer, but, like, a pretty clear, like, vision of, like, how flawed I am from a character perspective and the harm that I've done to others, like, until I've done that work, it's really hard for me to grow spiritually without having that, like, that basis, or, like, that, like, that baseline. For me, like, I worked step 10 selfishly. Like, I'm just
lazy, you know. I wrote my four step. I hated it. I did my fifth step. I hated it. I wrote my eighth step. I hated it. I made amends. I hated making amends. And when I had the idea of like step 10, like, oh, if I'm feeling like bad or like I do something bad, like I can just solve it like now, you know, I'm not perfect. You know, like today at work, I asked somebody like, quote, are you effing stupid? You know, like to their face. Right. And then he said, that's a personal attack. And then I said, ad hominem, you know, and then just like went about my day, you know. And then I'm reading this now. I'm like, oh, I need to apologize to that person because I am an asshole. So that's all I've got. Thank you.
Hey, you know, I've been having drug dreams pretty recently, man. These drug dreams are different compared to when I first got sober. When I first got sober, I'd have these drug dreams, and I'd be dreaming I'm smoking crack, and I'd wake up, and I'd realize I'm sober, and I'd just get so pissed off that, you know, I'm sober. You know, I have these same kind of dreams here nowadays, and I wake up, and I think, thank God that was a dream, and thank God I wasn't actually doing that. You know, that's the mental shift. The program has brought me in the last year, and as the book says here, you're not going to even realize it. And I didn't realize it. I didn't, you know, there wasn't like some, the clouds parted and the hand of God came down and touched me and said, Don, from now on you're thinking different. No, it wasn't like that. It was, I didn't even notice it. I just started thinking a bit better, thinking a bit different. And, you know, I'm not interested. I lost that obsession with drugs and alcohol. You know, it was, you know, a year or so ago, I was obsessed with it. I was like, damn, man, wish I was out getting high. Now I don't think about that kind of stuff, man. I think about better things. I think about stuff that's more important in my life. And again, all that was subtle. It's like kind of like a spiritual awakening. You know, Bill had a big, profound one, and Dr. Bob had a slow one, you know. Mine was, it was slow. Slowly but surely, every day, a little bit better, a little bit looser. The grip of addiction. It was released, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. But, you know, and I'm not cocky about it. I don't want to rest on my laurels. I know that if I think I've got it licked, and the bad thing will happen, and I will be back at square one. So I'll kind of, it's an ongoing thing as well. So that's all I got to say.
What is so easy for an alcoholic to do?
It's easy to let up. Spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels.
What lies ahead and why?
We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe.
We are not what of alcoholism.
We are not cured of alcoholism.
What do we have and what is it contingent on?
What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition.
What must we carry every day?
Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities.
The following is the 10-step prayer. Who do we want to serve and whose will?
How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done.
Are these thoughts optional?
These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly.
I have a comment here. And there are those who continue to say there are no musts in Alcoholics Anonymous. But here are two more of them. What can we now do?
We can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish.
Why are we now able to do that?
It is the proper use of the will.
And I have a comment here. It says, if we are now sane when it comes to alcohol, it becomes pretty obvious that we would do well to decide to apply these steps to our lives through willingness, which can be forced by self-will. Thank God sanity has returned before we were given the opportunity to apply self-will again.
Just do the next paragraph and then we'll open it up.
What do we receive?
Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power.
What are we promised if we carefully follow the directions in this book?
If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us.
What have we begun to be?
To some extent, we have become God-conscious.
What have we started to develop?
We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense.
Now that we have recovered, can we stop, and what must we do now?
But we must go further, and that means more action.
All right, we'll go ahead and we'll open up those two paragraphs. Thank you.
alcoholic. My name is Shelby. So I thought when I came in the first time and I stopped drinking, that was it. And I would never have an issue again. I was cured. I was fixed. And I got comfortable. You know, I was like 5, almost 6 years sober. I got very, very comfortable. And I slowly started doing things and that I was doing regularly, I stopped doing completely and didn't know I was not doing them. And, you know, I picked up. And it was like, it wasn't that I wanted to or needed to. I just wasn't doing my program, so I did. It was like really just automatic, like just a real alcoholic without a solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, just really Shelby, Shelby, Shelby with a little bit of like, I know about AA. but yeah, so like it really was just the lack of maintenance, which is what is my healthy fear today. You know, I just stopped doing the things. And I think that's why it's so important for me today when I do stop doing something that I tell someone I'm not doing this. And like, I wasn't going to meetings and I wasn't praying and I wasn't talking to my sponsor. And if I did talk to her, it was whining. It wasn't talking. And I wanted her to fix my problems. And I no longer had this God consciousness. I had like my sponsor consciousness and Shelby. And like, that's not going to help me. It never did before. I don't know why at 5.5 years sober, I thought it would all of a sudden. And so like today, you know, when I first came back, people would be like, why'd you drink, man? And I'd be like, I don't know. But I do know. Like 100% I know. I didn't know at the time when they asked, but I know. And that's why today is very important for me. And I love what you said about like, if I'm not working with someone, I'm going to probably not do step 10 and 11 regularly. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I'm just going to get comfortable with where I'm at, which is another very big fear of mine, of being like a little too comfortable where I'm at, you know. And I strive for God consciousness today, but it is really, really challenging to have it flow in me through and through, that at least I have like, I feel it the most when I talk to my sponsor, when I talk to another alcoholic, which I think is, you know, God here on earth with us. But on my own, it's still really tough. Like on my own, like it's not my first nudge to do, to pray, to talk to God. But then I have times where it's perfect. It's great. It's everything. It's golden. And it's like, this is what I want. This is what I strive for. So yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Shelby.
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic.
Hey, Spencer.
So, for me, when John was talking earlier about you know, this nasty feeling in his gut, the way I took it was like he did something that could have been perceived as like a negative action towards somebody else, and I have a different perspective getting further into the book, because when I get that nasty feeling in my gut, it's like I gambled and I lost, you know. And it's not like I'm actively thinking I'm gambling, but it's like in my mind I have this delusion where I feel like everything should go this way. And God will pull the rug from underneath my feet and tell me, nah, that's not what's going on today. And I have like two options now. I can rest on my laurels and I can just sit in pity, or I can do my own version of this 10th step prayer. And that's what I choose to do today. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. I go, okay, God, this isn't what you wanted me to do. Where do you want me to go from here? And, it's not like I have a game plan of what that next step is. I'm just like, okay, God, show me what the next step is. And I live my life through that. And I don't harp on these negative things, and I just keep trying to do the next right thing, and beautiful things start to happen. And I'm forever grateful for the 10th step. Thank you.
Alcoholic Mike Chase. I really wish I had been introduced to the 10th step in maybe junior high, maybe 8th grade. I probably could have done a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, my 7th grade or 6th grade, because I was not the person that I had been when I was 5, 6, 7, or 8. I had slowly become that lying, cheating, stealing, self-centered, inconsiderate, backstabbing person by 8th or 9th grade, and I just got better at it. And soon it just became such a part of me, I didn't even see my flaws. I had become this horrible victim. People are not, you know, people are always taking advantage of me. And thank God I had a 4-step and a 5-step where it's pointed out, and I looked, and my sponsors actually spent time in the 4th and 5th column pointing out my part and all those things. I've worked with a lot of people over the years, and one of the hardest things to get an alcoholic out of is that victimish. And this is one of the greatest things about the 10th step. When somebody wrongs you or takes advantage of me or calls me out on something, I can sit down and I can write out a 4-step inventory. What did they do? They called me out for something that I did. Well, what did that affect? Well, that affected my pride, my security. What was my role in it? Well, I'm egomaniac. I'm sensitive, and I do no wrong, and everybody else is out to get me. And then I share that with my sponsor, and he just giggles, and he just calls me out on my shit, and he points out to it. And then he says, why don't you get over this? Go help another alcoholic to get me out of my selfish pity party. Yeah, oh, they're all out to get me, pity party. So I'm out helping with somebody else. And the cool thing about reaching out and calling somebody when I've been a 10-step person, it gives them the right to say, damn, if he can do that, I can do that. And then they reach out and they call somebody when that's appropriate. And then that person can see, that's the whole idea about this. I love the fact that you brought up the James and how they had set this really high level of personal behavior and attitudes back in the old days. Nowadays, we let shit slide left and right as long as you don't drink and go to meetings. But back then, you know, we had the four absolutes, the absolute honesty, purity, and selfishness and love. Never going to achieve it, but at least we try to do better and better each day. And I think sponsors were like, back in those days, were willing to call people out on their shit, their greed, their inappropriateness, you know, all the things that people slide through day in AA because we just go to meetings and that's what we do. The 10th step has allowed me to continue to see where I need to get better. When I'm working with a newcomer and we get to this part, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. I'd stop and I say, do me a favor, pinpoint the day that you stopped thinking about getting high or drunk. And they pause a little bit and they go like, I don't know, it just disappeared. It's like, really? When have you started developing a relationship with God? And they go, yeah, you know, I pray, we talk. And I say, yeah, that's cool. Have you triggered the allergy lately? And they go, no, I haven't. No, it's like, dude, you're recovered. But that's just the beginning, because we still have victimhood in us. We still can lie, cheat, steal, and manipulate without us even knowing it. So when I do a 5-step, I take all their character defects. Sometimes there's 12, sometimes there's 30, and I laminate them. And I say, you check on this every so often. If these things start popping up, we need to talk about it. So step 10 is the one that keeps me from turning back into that victimless little witch I used to be. Thanks.
Everyone, I'm still Hugh. Something that caught my eye here, but I didn't understand in the beginning myself, and I don't want anyone to go through what I went through. But here is the word again, removed. Okay, removed, I thought initially was, oh, it's gone forever. No. Removed means set aside. So, and it makes it clear here. It says, oh, here we are. So we have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. So for context for that, for me, I've learned and still learning, is that they found some seeds in a tomb or cave. And they were like 2,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 years old. So what they brought them out into the sun, put them in the water and warm sunlight, they sprouted, they were tomatoes. Same thing with my character defects and my shortcomings. They are removed. God removes them from me, which means they're set aside. Some people term it as I look back and hear the different scenarios or the way it was explained. You know, it's doing push-ups, just waiting on me. Well, it isn't. I've learned that for me, it's when life happens, if I'm not spiritually fit and spiritually maintained, that's the sunlight and the warmth on that seed. And what is it going to do? It's going to sprout because that's my go-to. But if I've exchanged my spirit acquired and maintained my spiritual life, which means I should be better tomorrow than I was today. When that life on life terms happened, my go-to is going to be His word and God's word and His promises, and relying on His strength, not mine, because mine's going to go to pick up a drug or a drink. But that's been exchanged as it stays here clearly. So that's when I saw the word remove again. That it reminded me that no, this isn't, and that keeps me close to Him. If God were to say, heal me from all of my shortcomings, and I would say, oh, thanks for the ride. You know, that would be the end of our relationship. Without there weren't friction in my life, I would have no need to pursue Him on a daily basis. I wouldn't get closer to Him on a daily basis. You know, and when I read the biggest book where the big book was drawn, it's actually a love story, the greatest love story I've ever studied, of how much He loves us. He loves me more than I know how or am capable to love myself. I wouldn't put up with me. You know, when it comes down to it, you know, he says when, and that was about forgiveness, he says, well, how many times are we supposed to forgive our brother? And it's like 7 times 70. And then I'm, wow. And I thought, well, wait a minute. How many times have I asked Him to forgive me? It's infinite. So how can I expect less of something, someone else that I'm not willing to give to them freely that He's given to me? That's back to helping another alcoholic. We can relate to them. You know, and sometimes for myself, the hardest person thing or any to forgive was me. But I didn't know what I was to Him, and that when I learned studying the value of what I mean to Him, it would help me to forgive me. Thank you.
Darren, alcoholic. I like the part about we can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. It made me think of really just people in general and how, like, we've applied our will to, like, so many different areas of our life, like our will to climb corporate ladders or business ladders or overcome challenges or manipulate, steal, like, work these things in our favor. Like, we've exercised willpower in those things. So it's not like we're useless or we can't make things happen. Like, God is like, what if this will was just channeled in a different direction? Imagine, like, if you were willful in bringing love and tolerance into the rooms that we went in, or just all the principles in here, like making those, like aligning with that when your day starts and you're bringing that level of willpower into the environments you're in, like how impactful you could actually be as opposed to tearing others down and tearing yourself down. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Darren.
Tim, alcoholic. It's such a relief, like, thy will, not mine, be done. Like, there's so many things over the course of the day that does not go my way. And if I just, you know, accept and have humility, you know, I find that, like, when I wake up, if I try to get, like, a sense of, like, the vibe for the day, and it's always different, it's always changing. You know, people are going to cut me off. I get mad about it. It's a waste of my will. It's a waste of my energy. That I think that's, like, one of the greatest blessings I found. It's like, maybe sometimes I'm too humble and too passive, but at the same time, like, just watching the world go by and how people are, and, you know, just kind of like stop blaming people and not look so much at who's done what, but what's actually happening and how I can best address it. You know, like, thy will, not mine, be done. Like, it's just a relief. It's one of the best things ever.
Thanks, Tim. All right, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up.
All right. From A Vision for You, page 164, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but you obviously cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact for us.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.
And here at the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group, we like to celebrate sponsorship. So if anybody is here and they have a new sponsee they're working with and they want to get them connected to the group, you can present him with a sponsorship medallion. And if you don't have one, you can bring two next week.
Is anybody celebrating a year or more of sobriety that would like a medallion? Bring two next week.
Does anybody need a sponsor?
Everybody needs a sponsor.
Don't bring two of those. You only need one of those.
If you'd like to become a member of this group, please join us after the meeting to fill out a membership card.
Can all home group members raise your hand? Great. We'll see you right after the meeting to help take down the room.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We hope to see you next week. And Thursday evening is our Alcoholics and God Step Series workshop starting at 7:15 in this very room. And we've got Kelly H., and she will be starting a six-week series for us. So now's a good time to come check that out.
Ooh. Shelby's going to chair.
And Shelby is chairing. She'll be there.
Shelby. Yeah, definitely do that. Please wait till you're 75 feet away from the doors to vape or smoke, or if you're emotionally stable, you can use, there's a balcony out there you can use.
All right, we're going to go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Who woke us up today?
Our Father.
Lord in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, bah, 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 when you're laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. Crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling.
shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Long
shine a light on me tonight. Shine a light on me tonight. Ooh, there's no place for a woman like me. My hands are dirty, but my soul is clean. So love, shine a light on me tonight. As heavy these feet has fallen, so go and I work these hands.
Got one man that just won't say.